Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. It's the Roguecast for Wednesday, July 22nd, and we'll start right off with the news. There's not a lot of store news for August, actually.
We have to take a break sometimes. It's hot.
Yeah, it's hot. So Reading with Rogues is going to be on August 11th. It is going to be Through the Woods, the sort of horror webcomic collected into a graphic novel by Emily Carroll.
Yep.
And I finally got a chance to read, and I really liked.
Cool.
And that is going to be at Palermo... Pasta? Palermo's Pasta? Something like that?
Yeah, I don't know what the subtitle is.
It's an Italian place over on Main Street in Round Rock. And Dave and Tila have been there quite a bit, and they recommend it. So we're going to go there, and if we don't like them, you may pelt them with meatballs.
That actually sounds like a great punishment. I hope people don't like it.
I mean copies of the DVD of the movie Meatballs.
Sure.
Bless. And then Gaming with Rogues. We haven't scheduled a place yet. We're looking at a couple options, but it's going to be on August 17th, and we're doing Red Dragon Inn, the game of drinking and fighting after an adventure. Other store news this week. There's actually quite a bit of product and stuff that we want to talk about.
Yes.
So Super Fight has been for a while here. We've had the expansions, but not the main game.
Yep.
But I just got in touch with the guys, and they said, no, it's not out of print. We'll send you a copy. So we should be getting a whole lot of copies of Super Fight base game later this week or early next.
Nice. I was, some guys were in the store just yesterday picking up some of the, we have a handful of the expansions still in there.
Right, sure.
And they were buying some of the, I think, like the location ones, and I was giving them a few examples of some of the ones that we had had.
Yeah.
And how they had would change the course of a battle. You know, somebody who would otherwise win might not if it's in 0G, or if you're at Comic-Con or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I believe I was like the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man, and somebody else was like some Harry Potter character.
Yep.
And somebody made a cogent argument that because it was at Comic-Con, they would rally the varying fans behind them.
Yeah.
And that would change the course of things. And, the person who shouldn't won somehow beat my Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man. I don't know how, but Comic-Con...
the many Ghostbusters cosplayers.
No. Stay Puffed lost.
Yeah. It was probably Harry Potter. It might have been Wolverine.
It was something like that.
At any rate, that game's coming back in. If you've never played it, we definitely recommend
Super
it.
Super fun.
Also, that creator has a game, Red Flags, that is coming out. The Kickstarter is about to hit. That is Red Flags being the red flags you would use not to date someone.
Okay.
So it's sort of a dating game version of Super Fight.
Okay.
And sounds pretty hilarious. He is putting finishing touches on it. It's going to be Skybound as well. I've already said to them, hey, look, whenever you guys carry that, we'd like to carry that too.
So these are going
to
be bizarre red flags, like his eyebrows are on fire?
Yes, something like that would be my guess. So that'll be fun.
I'm just guessing.
We also, after quite a while being out, we restocked on Tim Doyle's prints.
Yes.
Y'all may have seen those. He does a lot of stuff based around Tarantino movies or Wes Anderson movies, other pop culture. He did some Doctor Who ones.
And the thing I like most about his prints, other than the fact that super awesome artist,
yeah,
is that a lot of times he sort of approaches his subject a little bit obliquely, a little bit from the side, so that... it doesn't look like you're putting up just like a movie poster.
Right.
That is to say, it's not screaming the name of the movie. Sometimes you got to look at it a little bit and you're like, oh, that's, the bar from Pulp Fiction.
Well, his famous stuff is called Unreal Estate, where he does sort of abandoned or late at night versions of pop cultural landmarks like the Quickie Martin or Springfield or the Firefly Ship or various other things. We do still have a few of those postcards of that. But he also does, a lot of Wes Anderson, a lot of Tarantino.
Just pop culture stuff in general, like Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, we've got two new ones that we haven't had before. There's a great-looking Ninja Turtles one with Casey Jones on it.
Nice.
And there's
Casey
a really...
needs to get more respect.
There's a really cool new Detective Comics one that he did.
Oh, cool.
That is, and these are all limited run. I imagine that Tim tends to reprint, but some of these we may, like the Doctor Who one, I believe, is gone right now. We don't have the TARDIS one.
It'd be kind of few and far between.
Yeah, so worth taking a look. We have all those back out on the shelves, and we'll be keeping those stocked. We've put Amanda in charge now, so she's.
Oh my god.
And then Nick and I. Well, before we get to that, we also got a new End of the World. Which we talked about this before. They did a zombies game.
It's an RPG.
Yeah.
They're putting out a series of sort of potential end of the world RPGs, each one with a different theme, but the hook on all of them is that you play yourself.
You play yourselves, yes.
And the first one was sort of zombie apocalypse.
And there were like four different types of zombie apocalypse.
They served up sort of the traditional zombie one, a Haitian zombie one.
Right.
There's one where they were caused by like radioactivity from a meteor and they were like weird, like, fast-moving, weird zombies.
And then there's, like, plagues, you know, like 28 Days Later style. So.
Right, right.
This End of the World is The Wrath of the Gods. The second one is called Wrath of the Gods. And it has, of course, has the Rapture.
Right.
And it has Quetzalcoatl, of all things.
Oh, right. Well, you know, that'd be like a 2012.
It's the Mayan, 2012 apocalypse.
It's also got Cthulhu.
And Cthulhu is on the cover, which I think was a smart move.
Yep.
And then there's Ragnarok is in there.
There's one called Gaia's Revenge, so I assume it's sort of
the happening style, sort of.
Probably better than the happening.
I would hope so.
Oh, and Ragnarok.
Yeah.
So Norse End Times, which, you know, I don't know, I haven't looked at it to see how they play it. But I feel like, you know, if you've got, like, frost giants invading the city, or the Midgard serpent churning the seas...
Yep,
that is actually in there.
That's actually pretty cool.
The one I was most interested in was the one about Ragnarok, and it is very cool sort of see how they kind of incorporate the players into that.
Yeah, it seems very fun.
Well, go ahead.
I'm planning on, I have a separate podcast I do.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, called Randy Plays Games over at oneofus.net. We actually have done a few different ones where I just recorded a Rat Queens adventure starring four female players that was just a whole lot of fun.
And you used D&D 5e for that?
We used D&D 5e, and it was Amanda's first experience with D&D, and another player first ever role-playing game.
Mm-hmm.
And so that one will be going up in a couple of weeks, if I remember to mention on this podcast when it goes up. But if you go over to oneofus.net and pull up the Randy Plays Games, you can find all those. Anyway, the guy who runs the site, one of the guys who runs that site, saw this game and was like, this needs to happen. So this is on the docket for maybe like September, I believe.
Now here's a question, Randy. I know that the suggestion in the zombie game, and I assume the of this version of End of the World is the same, is that you don't tell the players what end time scenario they're getting into.
Yep.
So they could go in not knowing if they're going to get Cthulhu or Ragnarok or what. Are you going to stick to that?
Yes, that's the plan.
Nice.
I mean, I feel like they'll feel cheated if I don't do Cthulhu, but that doesn't mean I'm going to do it anyway. So we'll see.
I don't think if I sat down and ended up doing a Ragnarok, I would feel cheated.
You shouldn't.
Any of those scenarios, I wouldn't feel cheated.
Finally, not directly store-related, but close to the store, both Nick and I have already tried. There's a new Cuban place in Round Rock called Mambo House.
Yeah.
It is just down the road from us. It's back where if you know where the Kauai Shaved Ice is, it's right across the street from there.
We should credit our customer who pointed out.
Oh, yeah, Gilbert Drab, who has come to a lot of our Reading with Rogues events.
It's also right next to Round Rock Donuts.
Is it? No.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It's connected. It took the place of where the Papa John's used to be.
That's not where Round Rock Donuts is.
Yes,
Round Rock
Main
Donuts.
Street?
Yeah, no, Round Rock Donuts is a little further down.
No, it's right there.
Okay,
trust me.
It's not the same parking lot.
It is. Their parking lots are connected.
Okay, you say so. I don't believe you. But you were there today, and I was there yesterday.
Just Google Map people.
Yeah. At any rate.
But the verdict is good.
The verdict is quite good.
People doubt me all the time, and
it's because you're wrong so much.
Nick, you had it for lunch today. Tell me what you had.
I had their Cubano sandwich.
The classic?
It was quite delicious. And
so Cubano, for those who don't know, is a
Cuban sandwich.
Yeah, roasted pork, ham, Swiss cheese, mustard, pickles.
Yep. And they have, like, this one had a certain kind of mustard. It wasn't a traditional mustard.
Oh,
it
nice.
Was like a tropical mustard of some sort. It was very good. Mm. Quite nice on grilled bread.
And what was what were the fries?
They were yucca fries, which is a root, same as a potato, a little bit lighter, I think.
Yeah.
And probably better for you.
Yeah.
Even though they are still fried.
And they even had like some kind of homemade ketchup that looked really good with it.
Yep, homemade ketchup. And when you go there, you actually get fried plantains.
Yeah, sort of instead of chips and salsa, they do fried plantain chips.
Oh, nice.
And they come with a habanero.
There's a sweet habanero one, and then there's the mojo sauce.
Yeah, which is sort of a buttery tropical fruit kind of sauce.
Yeah,
really good.
Both really good.
I think if you check out their website, I was just skimming through it the other day, and it all sounded really good. Say the name of the place again.
Mambo House.
Mambo House.
Yeah, look up their menu. It's all everything I've had so far has been good, and everything looks really good, and the place is really nice.
That either will prove one of you two right.
Or somehow both of us will be wrong.
Oh, no, I'm right.
All right, so you're so not right.
we'll get to this later.
All right, moving on to non-store news. First, the comic news. There is a new comic from William Gibson, who you may know as the father of cyberpunk, basically.
Neuromancer.
And he is working with IDW on a new comic that's coming out in 2016. It is called Archangel, And
no relation to the X-Men of the same name.
It's co-written by Michael St. John Smith, which probably means that Gibson sort of passed this along to his buddy, Michael St. John Smith. But, you know, still, whatever. And the artist is Butch Geiss, who is
super talented.
Really good. He did Captain America, Winter Soldier. So the official synopsis from IW is that Archangel is a wild time travel romp between the closing days of World War II and a present-day United States that doesn't look a thing like our present day. Archangel is full of classic William Gibson plot twists, dialogue, characters, and settings. Post-apocalyptic cyberpunk World War time travel storytelling at its finest.
It sounds fun.
Yeah. I'm excited.
You know, among the other genres that are not, like, sort of being mined heavily right now, I guess there's probably more cyberpunk books right now than there are, say, steampunk books. There's probably more stuff that has cyberpunk influence. But I don't know that there's a lot of cyberpunk books.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, are there... Am I missing out on
that? Empty Zone from Image is somewhat cyberpunky, and I feel like there's one other.
There's gotta be some of the stuff that, like Lowe or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. But nobody's doing what I call a straight-up cyberpunk. And this sounds like this is not a straight-up cyberpunk
That's
either.
That's true. That's true.
Where's my Johnny Mnemonic comic book?
He's starring Keanu Reeves.
Sure, I'd be fine doing more Adventures of Johnny Mnemonic.
All right, so the rest of the stuff we've got is sort of movie and TV news, but... Well, we got one more game news before we get to that, and that is that there's a new Kickstarter from Jason Morningstar, I believe, right?
He's one of, like, the co-designers on it.
Oh, okay.
I'd have to actually – I don't have it up in front of me to look it up, but you're talking about
the Warren, right? Yeah, yeah.
The Warren, which, for all practical purposes, it is a Watership Down game.
Yeah. But you said there's actually even different worlds in there.
Sort of. That is to say, different settings, but I think they are in different worlds. So the main thing about this game is that it seems to use the Apocalypse World system, which will probably be more familiar to a lot of our customers as the Dungeon World system. Sort of, like, quick-to-play, intuitive style, when we play Dungeon World... fantasy adventure game that kind of sidestepped the heavy mechanics of D&D and certainly of Pathfinder, but even of D&D in favor of kind of, I would say, somewhat more cinematic, more improvisational role playing.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be adapting that to the Bunny Life.
Yep, Bunny Life, yo.
This is not the first time that there's been a game like this.
There was
Bunnies and Burrows in the 80s.
GURPS, Bunnies and Burrows.
Which are... a customer and our D&D volunteer Ray Kalina reminded me existed before the GURPS version of it.
There was a pre-GURPS.
Yes, okay. It was GURPS was just using the GURPS system, but he said it had like a percentile system.
Oh.
And I remember he said at the time he was intrigued by it because it had skills when no one else had skills.
So right,
it may even go back to the 70s.
Okay, all right.
But in any case, it did exist, so people have looked to do a Watership Down style epic adventure for little critters and stuff before. Of course, you're going to be. I'm guessing there's a lot of sort of travel stories or, trying to get certain items. Your enemies are going to be predators, humans who are, developing the land or hunting it and things like that.
Yeah.
And the settings that – it, comes with one that very much sounded like an English countryside, so Watership Down.
Sure, yeah.
But there was also one that was, their stretch goals have been met for the Kickstarter already, so it's funded. I decided to go ahead and fund it to Napcopy.
Yeah. Well, especially when Kickstarters get funded to that level, and you're like, okay, well, I'm going to get a really good deal if I fund this at this point. Yeah.
The other locations are, there's a Central Park one, or, basically, a city park.
Yeah, which is kind of cool.
Rabbit Warren, with there's going to be a lot more people around and stuff.
Yeah.
There was one that was kind of weird. It was like along an Egyptian river or something.
Yeah,
like that.
That's the one you talked about.
I assumed it was in the present, but it, a lot of times when games do in Egypt, it's always like ancient Egypt. I don't think that's the case, but, and there's one other one that escapes me, but they've got a lot of fun settings for it, and I'm interested to see what they'll do with it.
Yeah, sounds kind of fun.
They seem to indicate that it was going to print, rather quickly, they said August or something.
I've seen with this a lot of the game ones where basically they finish the game and then they kickstart it.
Right.
They know they're going to do it.
Printing costs.
Yeah, because the Six Gun Kickstarter just funded, and I've already got my PDF copy of the rulebook.
Oh wow, that's crazy!
It's done. I mean, it came the week after they funded it, and the hardcovers I believe are coming to print. We'll have those in the store as soon as they hit. So
nice,
that's really cool.
All right, so then moving on to movie and TV news. We saw the first photos from Age of Apocalypse, X-Men Apocalypse.
Right. There's been a little bit of internet buzz around this, mostly associated with the. That Apocalypse doesn't look buff enough.
Yep.
But
people are right. He does look a little bit like a Power Rangers villain.
It's probably, I'm going to guess it's a little bit more, it will have somewhat better production values ultimately than that. But
well, my thing is, like, Apocalypse was never going to be a big, bulky dude. He was going to have to be CGI for his stretchy powers and everything. So
see, the thing is, I will say, they could do that. The Hulk is big, and he looks pretty good. The Hulk Buster suit was.
Yeah.
What I was telling Nick the other day, though, is, like, the more big kind of CG characters I get on the screen, though, if there's, like, him and some of the X-Men that are CG, then the fakiness all starts to show through.
Yeah. I think he'll be the CG one, and everybody else is going to be having CG for their powers.
Yeah.
Because nobody else is big and bulky, I don't really think.
So do you, I mean, you think that they're going to use CG on him?
Absolutely, I think they are.
Do you think, I had a thought, last night, one of our customers was posting about it. And I was wondering if he might actually increase in bulk as the thing went. Like, you know, like if, say, his horsemen kill a mutant or, you know, whatever his movie angle is going to be absorb a mutant's powers or whatever, that he'll absorb that and, you know, bulk up.
I don't know.
It's possible.
It is kind of a weird call. Like, if you're going to promote it, it does seem like, you know, the Marvel era of, like, fan appeasement, you know, that they've been able to be both, you know, fairly creatively strong and, you know, impress the fans.
Yeah.
It does seem like, you know, the first shot of Apocalypse should have the grandeur that they want from him, which means giant-ass Apocalypse. It's just a bit of a misstep.
But there are two other big notable ones. One is the Mohawk Storm.
Right. So I had actually posted that picture.
Yeah.
It was just a screen cap from one of the San Diego videos that had leaked. And he was in it, and I didn't know who he was, and I didn't care. I'm like, that's some new mutant, whatever. And I was like, but look, Storm's Mohawk, because it looks great.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. And then there's Psylocke. Olivia Munn is Psylocke, and she looks perfect.
She is very much 90s Psylocke.
Yeah, it's exactly right. So I think that was really cool. So things are looking good for Apocalypse, and I'm hopeful that we're going to get something good out of that movie.
You know, on a somewhat related note, we should mention that the Rogue cut of X-Men Days of Future Past has just hit.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know, the Rogue had a subplot in that apparently was completely excised for the theatrical version.
Yeah.
I don't know what the plot was, but Rogue featured heavily into it.
Yeah.
Maybe 10 or 15 minutes worth?
Yeah, something like that.
It was 10 minutes, I think.
Anyway, that version is out. I completely forgot to buy it while it was cheap. I missed my shot. But I'll probably end up picking it up anyway. I'm kind of excited to see it. I liked Anna Paquin as Rogue.
Yeah, me too. And then there is the less exciting news about the screenwriters for Spider-Man.
The Spider-Man movie is just kind of sounding weird.
Everything they announced sounds at first blush like, really? Like, okay, so their Spider-Man is, it says Tom Holland, so it's not... And he's a weird. We don't know who he is.
No, but he has a cool video online of him doing Spider-Man like things.
Okay, but he was in the musical version of something, wasn't he?
Billy Elliot.
He was in the Billy Elliot musical.
I can buy a sort of unknown talent as a superhero. You know, you might get the Christopher Reeve.
Sure, you never know.
Looked okay.
Yeah, it's a little weird, but not super weird.
But then
they announced the director, who is John Watts, who's directing the up and coming director of Cop Car. A movie no one's ever heard of.
That sounds like a fake
title. People have heard of it.
His previous two movies were like internet shorts that nobody's heard of. You want to talk about, you talk about like up and coming first time director type guy. This guy didn't even do music videos.
He's he did a horror movie that Dave hated. And then
what horror movie?
It was the one that had
the clown one.
Yeah, the clown one.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
And then the Cop Car, which actually is winning a few awards at indie movie film fests.
Sure, okay. So they grabbed two people nobody's ever heard of, and then they got someone everybody's heard of. That's Marissa Tomei as Aunt May.
Right.
Which everyone's like, huh.
Sexy Aunt May.
Because that's a little weird, too. And then... On the eve of their directorial debut with the reboot of Vacation, which, by the way, looks like a hate crime, John Francis Daley, who you might remember as one of the actors in Freaks and Geeks, among other things, and his writing partner, Jonathan M. Goldstein.
He was the lead guy on
Freaks and Geeks. Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah.
And they are they worked on such movies as Incredible Burt Wonderstone and Horrible Bosses. And also Clive with a Chance of Meatballs, although I think most of the credit for that goes to Lord Miller. But so they have been tapped to write Spider-Man.
This is just a weird. This is a lot of weird calls.
Yeah.
Well, like maybe this is some alchemy, Randy. That's like ingenious.
Yeah. Maybe it may all come together and be this amazing thing. I mean, we'll talk about it later. But Nick and I both went to see Ant-Man and really liked it. And that was a movie that everyone was had sort of, you know, penned in as a disaster because Edgar Wright was off and the casting sounded weird to them and all that stuff.
Had people penned it as a disaster?
Some people, a lot of people were not planning on seeing
it,
man.
The Guardians of the Galaxy effect.
Yeah, yeah.
Sony has been like, okay, we'll get Mark Webb to direct our Spider-Man, and we'll get Andrew Garfield, who's a pretty good actor, and get all these people who know, and then they end up doing a really
Two movies. But like Marvel's been doing that same thing, and you know, getting sometimes grabbing like lesser known talents, but a lot of their lead actors and stuff like that are kind of not nobody.
I'm just saying Sony has done this twice and failed.
Yeah.
So I think they're just like, okay, let's pick the most random people.
Do you think they may have overcorrected? It's like they were steering really hard to get away from Scylla, and they steered right into Charybdis.
Nice metaphor.
Thank you. I was very proud of that.
It's not often that we have Homeric metaphors here, but today is the day.
Well, here's the thing. I can't write it off because who knows? These things might actually work.
I'm not writing it off, but I'm definitely in the, oh no.
What if the first trailer is just bonkers insane?
I expect that might be the case.
Psychedelic Spider-Man.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. If it's
death metal music.
I'm going to predict it's Spider-Man fighting Big Wheel.
That would be awesome.
Actually, that would win me over immediately. That would immediately win me over. That's all you need to do. Listening, Marvel, that's all you need to do. No, it is not in. It's not in Superman versus Batman, which is why God Why technique plays for me. But yeah. But it's definitely in the. I don't know about
this.
Well,
here's the thing, and Marvel is involved. I mean,
I don't know how involved.
Well,
I mean, what if Marvel's involvement is standing in the room going, no, don't stop, do it, stop doing that. What are you doing?
They're putting their names on it, though, and I think if they didn't agree with the choices that Sony's making, they'd pull their names.
What if their name comes out as a question mark at the end? Marvel?
Yeah, I don't know.
So, I mean, I have to give them the benefit of the doubt. They have yet to screw up a movie.
Yeah, but Sony screwed up like 5.
But
who has more power? Is Sony better at screwing up than Marvel is better at winning?
Exactly, that's the contest.
I honestly think Sony just going to give... Just say, okay, Marvel, do what you do. Make us a Spider-Man movie that sells.
I think that's what they should have done, but that's not what they're doing.
All right, the interviews I've heard is that Kevin Feige has been involved, and he was the one who suggested the director. So, I don't know.
Is it possible Kevin Feige was joking? And they took him seriously. He's like, yeah, why don't you get somebody who's never directed anything? Okay, we'll do that.
Here's another possibility, Randy.
Yep.
Sony exec with strong ventriloquism skills. Just a thought. He's in the room. Kevin Feige doesn't notice it.
Yeah.
He's just talking and the guy changes his voice up.
I think you're right. I think that's also a possibility. There are any number of things that could be going on.
Skrull.
Yeah, or you could be a Skrull.
This one is going to definitely need the teaser to sell it.
Yeah. All right. Finally, there's a little bit of TV news. They have cast another actor for Arrow, a guest star, Echo Kellum, who you may have seen, but probably not, on the Fox sitcom Ben and Kate, where he was great. He was sort of the nerdy best friend, and he had a crush on the girl. And I loved him, and he was really good. So he's been cast as Mr. Terrific. But he is cast as Curtis Holt, not Michael Holt. He is listed as a tech genius and inventor who works under Felicity Smoke at Palmer Industries.
So it sounds like a slightly different spin because the traditional Mr. Terrific was like a running the company kind of guy. And was also, I haven't seen what this guy is like physically, Randy, but you said he was kind of nerdy.
He's a little more nerdy.
Kind of a buff athletic type guy.
Although this guy's tall and athletic. They can definitely make him play that way.
He's one of these sort of few, you know, relatively few notable African-American heroes at DC.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see, you know, and they gave him a book when New 52 started, and it tanked completely.
Yeah.
He didn't have strong writing on it,
yeah,
I guess.
Like a lot of DC's.
But I feel like they may be able to find a vibe that works for him on...
The vibe that works is around Flash.
Oh, it's a vibe pun.
It's a vibe joke.
Yeah.
Vibe joke and Homeric jokes, I'm on fire.
You're something.
Are you?
No, but I might be.
What you meant to say is you're fired. Anyway, but I'll be interested to see what they do with this.
Yeah. Also, one last little bit. They just showed the new Flash costume.
Oh right.
They haven't shown everything, but we do see that he has the white on his logo, and it looks cool.
We want him to have yellow boots.
We want yellow boots. We're all pulling for yellow boots.
Yeah.
Hashtag yellow boots.
But at this point, I generally trust those guys.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I trust them as much as I don't trust Sony.
Every bit of news that comes out of DC's TV stuff, I'm like, oh yeah, I want those shows back right now.
What if season one is a fluke? What if season two is awful?
It's possible.
Well, then we'll always have season one.
Yep. But I don't think that's going to happen. All right, we'll be back in just a few seconds to talk about comics for this week. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, July 22nd, and Nick, I'm just going to jump in. What was your pick?
Sure. Surprise me.
Was it
the
Secret Wars pick?
Yes, it was. Okay. Because why break tradition?
I owe you $5, Randy.
Nah. No, this one actually kind of surprised me. It is the Star-Lord and Kitty Pryde number one. One, I haven't really been reading the Star-Lord book.
Yeah.
But it's written by Sam Humphries, which I think has been writing the main series.
Yes,
is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Art by, I can't say this, Alti Furmansia.
You're just making up words.
I probably am. I am sorry, Alti.
That was the guy in Assassin's Creed, right?
Yeah,
sure. The second Assassin's
Creed.
Sure.
Anyways, kind of a light story, but it's very interesting in the sense that Star-Lord was actually one of the people who was on the life raft of Reed Richards. And somehow he disappeared off of the life raft and was...
These were people from the regular Marvel Universe
correct.
Who got
he is
to,
R616.
Right, who are like... I don't know, what are they doing in the on the battle world right now?
They were stuck in the sort of life raft until Doctor Strange opened it. But
did
this,
that just happen recently?
Yes.
In the comics?
Yes, okay. Yes. But he has been out for a while and he has found refuge on one of the worlds in Secret War. And is this is not super spoiling anything, but he has taken a job as a singer at the Quiet Room.
oh, Black so it's Bolts. In the Inhumans stuff.
It
nice.
Is in the Inhumans.
Oh, okay.
And it's actually really, really fun. There's some fun nods of what he's actually singing because they don't have these kinds of movies in the world that he's in.
Yeah.
So he's stealing a bunch of stuff. There's a version of Gambit in here that is awesome, that is a straight-up thief sort of... Then there's an Emissary of Doom in Kitty Pryde.
Oh, that's how the two of them are
yeah,
together.
And
okay.
That's sort of how they meet, but
in our universe, they were dating.
Correct. They were actually engaged.
Oh, okay.
And
how often has Kitty Pryde been engaged?
What's that?
Has she only been engaged once?
I think she was engaged to Caliban once in the 80s.
Okay, yeah, that's true, yeah.
Were
almost
she and
married.
Colossus never...
They were never engaged.
I think they're just bow chicka wow.
They were just dating, and then Colossus cheated on her with some alien. Like that, and that happens,
what
people.
What about Pete Wisdom?
No, Pete Wisdom was not the marrying type.
Okay.
Colossus got exposed when internet hackers...
Yes.
busted that
space,
website.
SpaceAshleyMadison.com.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to give away, but a lot of things. There's just a lot of fun stuff in here. Like,
I'm curious, does he remember 616?
Yes, he remembers everything, and he's sort of... a little down on his luck in the sense that he misses his version of Kitty Pryde.
Sure. Is it heisty? I mean, it sounds like Gambit's in it, so there's a little heisty.
There's a little
maybe?
Bit of heisty. The band that he has is actually a few members of X Factor. So there's
nice.
Strong Guys, the drummer.
Spain
is the bass.
Where's Lila Shaney?
No.
No.
And they need to bring her somehow. And she should be in the next X Men movie. She's so like an 80s.
Yeah,
80s. She's basically.
Yeah. She's Joan Jett.
Yeah, Joan Jett, yeah.
But
she's teleporting Joan Jett.
Very impressed with the art. It's very animated and just fun.
Yeah, it's
poppy.
Cool looking.
It's just got a great sense of energy. I kind of get a Gillum March type vibe.
Is that Dreb with like? Is that Drax with a like
pompadour?
Pompadour.
Yes, it is in fact Drax with a pompadour.
That's the
this looks
thing.
Fun. I had not read this. I may have to give this one a read.
No, and I actually think
is that like a Johnny Bravo pompadour?
A little bit. It was just a lot of fun, and I expect it'll continue to be that. It surprised me. That's why I picked it.
You know, I thought that I was thinking that they had put all the Secret Wars titles out. That they were.
Oh no, there's still a few coming.
There's a few coming down.
House
the pipeline.
Of M hasn't hit yet.
Yeah,
and I think one or two others.
There,
but,
there's a couple.
But yeah, no Secret Wars just continues.
And more space
to be
on
good.
The wall. We got to send them back.
Yeah.
Dave, what you got?
Right. So mine is I'm re-upping a previous pick.
Yep.
This is the second
Heresy.
Issue of We Are Robin has hit. And it proved to be a fun continuation of the first one. It is also a literal continuation. You know, then the previous one, our guy, I can't remember his name. It should be right in there, but I don't remember.
Guy, yeah.
Our lead guy, this kid, is now like working with the Robins, and there's a conspiracy going on that has to do with this kind of like secret underground of like homeless people,
yeah,
that seem to have like bombs and stuff planted throughout the city that he's investigating.
It's people who have lost their memories and stuff through in game,
and right, and he's searching for his parents all the while. And in this one, he gets captured in it, and there's, I don't want to say too much about what happens, but the interrogation and what follows is an interesting sort of plot twist.
Oh yeah,
I wasn't quite sure where it was going, but the mystery that it sets up is kind of cool. And Nick, I won't say what the theory was, but Nick had an interesting theory about like who's running the Robins,
which makes a lot of sense.
And I thought it was an interesting theory. And looking at the interrogator in this, I'm like, there could be something to that. It even could be precisely that.
Yeah. If you want to know, and don't mind being potentially spoiled by speculation, ask Nick when you see him in the store what his theory is on.
And if he gets to be right, then he gets floating rights.
That's right.
Randy, we're also talking, as we were looking at some other first issues this week that we felt were less successful than, say, the first issue of this had been.
Yeah.
One of the things we were noting is that sometimes, in an effort to, some of the more, writers trying to go for a more sophisticated relaunch will forget, I think, a few basic things about characters.
Like, do some action.
Do some action. Make your guy cool and fun. Hook the reader with their powers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then I got to the second issue of this, and just in the first few pages, he's already being cool again.
Yeah.
And I was reminded of doing it right.
Yep.
So that was a nice little twist there.
I'm glad to see that Lee Bermejo has turned.
Yeah, because I wasn't a pretty good writer. Because I wasn't crazy about his Suiciders that he did.
No, I wasn't either. I think it was a little too convoluted and too much going on.
But We Are Robins is a really good first issue and really good second issue. Yeah.
It's fairly straightforward, too. There's a few mysteries going on. I like the sort of the Robin crew, who are basically sort of regular kids from around the city, obviously with some training and stuff, but they seem like a fun bunch.
Great art.
The artist, Jorge Corona.
And
Rob Haynes, that's right. It looks like he's doing breakdowns and Jorge is doing finishes. I'm really liking, too. It's got an energetic quality that reminds me of artists as varied as, like... who are those? Who's the Spider-Man artist?
Chris Bacalo?
No.
Roberto Ramos?
Ramos, but also a little bit of Scott McDaniel from the Nightwing run, just in that kind of energy. Yeah. Not in specific style, but the energy of it all. So, I'm happy to say that this seems to be another one of the... I haven't been as big on some of the DC relaunch titles, but We Are Robins is one of the successes, I think.
Yep, I agree.
Randy, what you got?
All right, so I'm also revisiting a past pick, but it's a new story arc. Spider-Woman number 9 starts a new story arc for the book that I don't ever pick my favorite new book before the end of the year, but this is on that list. It's on the short list of potential favorite new book of the year. I mean, it's really good. The art is really great by Javier Rodriguez, and this is a Dennis Hopeless book. Dennis Hopeless, who is writing, who also wrote Star-Lord, right?
No, that's
Sam Humphries. I confused the two of them. but this incorporates Porcupine into her crew in kind of a fun way.
I've seen that from the previews. I think that it looked like he was joining, and I was at this point I was really hoping it would happen because he's been a fun supporting character throughout that whole first story arc.
They do some fun stuff with him. There's some road trip stuff that goes on that's a lot of fun. And the villain they introduce and sort of the thing they stumble into is weird and fun. It reminds me of what I'm liking about, say, Squirrel Girl or Howard the Duck, which I think would explain why Dave was not as enamored of this one as I am, because you don't always like the humor as much as I do.
That's true.
But a lot of people...
It's not as out there as Squirrel Girl or Howard, though.
No, but it's definitely weird. It's quirky. Yeah. It's not unlike, say, what Steve Gerber would have done back in the
80s. Yeah, I could see that.
If you like sort of quirky and humor in your books, which I know a lot of people do, definitely check this book out, especially if you're liking things like Squirrel Girl and Howard the Duck, and if you like She-Hulk.
One of the things that I think, I didn't dislike the issue. I still enjoyed it.
You just didn't love it as much as I did.
I didn't love it as much as you did, but, we should mention the art, which continues to be amazing.
Yep.
I'm really, really warming to the new Spider-Woman outfit.
I love the new costume, and I liked the old one, but I think they did a really good job on the redesign.
One of the small things that I liked, it was a kind of a small casual thing, but when she's hanging around talking to Ben Urich and, Porcupine, she's got her, visor thing, tipped up.
Yeah.
Which are basically, glasses.
Yeah.
But, probably with all kinds of spy gear and stuff in it.
Yep.
And I just kind of, that's one of those things that the artist excels at, is the sort of, people who can both look superhero-y and also kind of casual.
Look
and
real, yeah.
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 But his work is amazing.
All right. Also on my list this week, Kanan Last Padawan number 4, which continues to be a great read. Punisher number 20. A couple more Secret Wars book, Future Imperfect number 3, Marvel Zombies number 2, Fight Club 2 number 3 hits this week, Prez number 2 from DC, which I'm going to give a read to because I like the first one well enough, and then a graphic novel from Top Shelf that was previewed at Free Comic Book Day. It's Motorcycle Samurai. It is a post-apocalyptic Western samurai story. And it's a lot of different chapters. Really nice art. Looks like fun. Kind of goofy and quirky. And I enjoy what I've read of it so far. Nick, what else is on your stack?
I have got a few more Secret Wars titles because there's always some of those. In E for Extinction number 2 and Marvel Zombies number 2.
Yep.
E for Extinction, by the way, that seems like it's very much a continuation of sort of the or like the school as envisioned by
Grant Morrison.
It's Grant Morrison era stuff. Yeah. I mean, it's using characters like Zorn and
the artist who I didn't know is very much from that Frank Quitely school.
Chris Burnham is a big Frank Quitely disciple, yes.
Chris Burnham is actually
writing it.
It's another guy.
Both of them.
It's Ramon Villalobos.
It's interesting that that has become a style that is.
Yeah, because some people really don't like that style.
I actually really like the way he draws the puffy jackets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, gives him a little it's bit very more... much in the tradition of kind
I,
of.
I love those outfits. I love those costumes.
Yeah, and it's nice. Yeah. It's nice to see him back again for a little bit. Marvel Zombies continues to be fun. The book that surprises me that continues to be fun is Deathstroke.
Yeah.
Who's writing it?
It's Tony Daniel.
Okay. Guy who has been writing it from the beginning.
But seeing him sort of square off against Wonder Woman on Themyscira.
Right, because he's all like God Killer.
Yeah, now. And it's just, there's some interesting stuff going on. The new issue of Birthright, which continues to be fantastic. It's
really good.
Truthfully, make this a television series or a movie or something, please. The 10th issue of Grayson
was so good.
Oh man, this mystery continues to sort of get a little bit more play, but there are some guest stars in this that are fantastic.
Yeah, this was a really good issue, and Mikael Janin is just killing on art in that
he
book.
He is, and I want to say that Tim Seeley and Tom King, their writing continues just to be fantastic.
Yep. What was Mikael Janin doing before Grayson?
Justice League Dark. Yep.
Oh, okay, and that had super
also
nice
art. Really nice art.
I just
wasn't
really following it.
And then some random stuff in the sense that the DC Comics did the new Cyborg, which I'm excited to read because it's the writer of
the Shaft comic,
that we really enjoyed. And it's got Ivan Reis on artwork, so
it'll be pretty.
Yeah. And the Justice League Gods and Monsters, the sort of prequel tie-in to it this is the Batman one.
Yeah.
So this is sort of focusing on that character
he's a vampire.
Yes, he's a vampire
DC
spoilers
to the DC animated movie coming out.
Which I think is coming out
I think it's this week.
Oh, is
maybe
it
next
week.
It's very soon.
Yeah,
but
it's very soon.
I don't think it's a spoiler when it's basically on the cover.
No, I was kidding around. But this has actually got Jam DeMatteis and Bruce Timm writing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be sort of in tone with what we see on the screen. So it should be interesting.
You know, Bruce Timm write the movie?
Yes, I think he write and sort of show ran.
Yeah,
I believe he's also directing.
He's going to be heavily involved in the Killing Joke adaptation that's coming up that Mark Hamill has hinted that he's interested in doing the joke.
And why would you not?
Right. If you
They'd
can
be
get
insane
him,
not to cast him.
Joker, insane. Nice, Randy.
Mm-hmm.
You are on fire, sir. I was going to say, when that comes out, one of the questions about Killing Joke is, will they be able to handle the darkness of that story in a mature and cool way?
Yeah.
And I think the Gods and Monsters would be as good a testing ground as any, because it's clearly a dark Justice League story.
Yeah, it is.
So we shall find out.
Yep. That is all I had on my
Dave, file. Anything else on your stack?
Did you guys mention these?
We have not.
No, did not.
So there is a book I have not had a chance to really read through yet. There's Wolf from Image Comics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like maybe I should read this thing on the back because I don't know how to describe what I saw flipping through it. Antoine Wolfe, a hard-boiled paranormal detective with a death wish, has to cope with a sudden responsibility for an orphan teenage girl who might be the key to the impending apocalypse, California style. Also featured, a bag full of cash, a serial killer on the loose, and many secrets. So Randy, I think you got a better look at it. It's definitely kind of told in sort of a... What would you even call it? Kind of a stylish way.
Yeah.
By Alice Cott. And has what I thought was really beautiful looking art from Matt Taylor, and coloring is Lee Luffridge. That's why the coloring
is
so good.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But anyway, new image number one there.
Yep.
And then if you've been enjoying Kate Leth's offerings, she's, of course,
Edward Scissorhands.
Edward Scissorhands and what, Adventure Time?
She's written on Adventure Time, I believe. Yeah.
She has a new book out called Power Up from Boom. And I actually don't know what this is all about, but it looks to be sort of a piece with, I would say, the kind of Adventure Time world. Not well, yeah, I guess somewhat with that. Well,
isn't it sort of the girl-powered, sort of like Powerpuff Girls type?
And Bravest Warriors.
Yeah, Bravest Warriors, all that kind of stuff.
Helpless
yeah.
Great Warriors.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, and I know folks have been kind of keeping up with her stuff, so that's a new offering from Kate Leth.
Yep. All right, I think that wraps up our comics talk for the week.
Oh, there is one more thing yes. that we what? Should mention.
Yes.
There are new legacy figures for the Firefly world.
They're trickling out.
They didn't get them all,
but this week we have the legacy figures for Jane and Wash.
Which
and
Wash comes with his little dinosaurs.
Wash comes with dinosaurs and a Hawaiian shirt.
Yep. It's true.
As long as we're mentioning action figures, we did do some restocks lately on the ArtFX statues from DC.
We got Nightwing, Green Lantern, and Aquaman.
I thought there was one more.
There's also a bunch of new pop vinyls that came in today.
We also got a restock of Marvel Select figures. So we got Daredevil, Gambit,
right, and some DC. We got Deathstroke, Deadshot, New Joker.
So, the new Joker looks cool.
Yeah, it does. It's really cool.
You should definitely check out action figures if you've got a yen for them.
Yeah, there was a lot of action figures and stuff like that this week. Also, some keychains, the DC and Marvel sort of stubby keychains that are kind of cool.
This wave is so cool.
It's really good.
I would want all of them, but then my keychain would be insane.
Yeah, I know. Mine is currently, I believe, I've got a Doctor Doom mini from the Tokidokis.
Yeah.
And then I've got an Iron Man from the new ones, and I just can't put anything else on there.
Your keychain could be used to swap out for the Golden Idol at the beginning of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yes.
I'm just saying, though, if I could find the Daredevil one, I'd be okay with swapping out
my neck. Are they the symbols? Is it like the DD?
No, it's actually him.
Little guy.
The fluffy versions.
I need to see him. I haven't seen these yet.
Yeah. There's a Vision one.
Yeah. All right. Well, that wraps up our comics talk for the week. And we'll be back in just a few minutes to talk about some movies and some games. Well, it's been a few weeks since we've had this section of the podcast.
That's true.
It's been
crowded out by other stuff.
Yeah, big comics week and then a big Marvel previews week, San Diego news. So, but we're going to talk some topics, some stuff that's on our mind, on our pop cultural radar, as our upfront intro always says.
Yep.
And first of all is Ant-Man, which Dave did not get to go see, unfortunately.
I was slated to, but craziness came up and I was not able to join them.
But Nick and I went with most of the staff. And,
exactly.
And we had a great time.
Yeah, no, I knew I would enjoy it. I think having the leads be Paul Rudd and Michael Douglas, you're kind of in for a fun ride. But I was very impressed with it overall.
There's also, there's a guest star in there from that I was surprised to see and was very pleased with how they did that. There is some nods to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but this is probably the funniest movie they've done. I mean, they definitely seem to be...
Over Guardians?
This is funnier than Guardians.
Oh, really?
I think the comic beats actually do hit a little bit stronger than they do in Guardians.
More specifically comedic than Guardians was.
What's the overall tone? Like, does it compare to any other kind of movie
It's a heist. At its heart, it's a heist movie.
Yeah,
I think I heard that, yeah.
But really, it's sort of a guy who maybe is getting he wants a second chance,
right?
But he's not what you
Scott Lang.
He's not what you think of as a standard superhero. So he sort of has that sort of slightly ironic distance from it,
right?
But at the same time, it's not making fun of superheroes,
right?
There's a little bit of part of that Ocean's 11 world. Feel to it.
But he's not a part of that world, yeah. So there's like the way him learning. There's a great montage where he learns to use the powers that is really funny,
yeah.
This, out of curiosity, sometimes what I was already kind of getting the vibe from some of the very early teasers and trailers and stuff. Sometimes the movie guys come up with uses for the powers, or even the video game guys to do this, and I'm like, why aren't the comic guys doing this?
There's definitely some of that.
Yeah. And they need to pay attention to these things.
Well, and just the visual effects in this one, they really go all out, and they utilize the powers very, very
well. They know that being small is a weird power,
right?
And they use that to great effect. There are some fight scenes or staged in some places you would never think to stage a fight scene.
Uh-huh.
You've seen one of them in the trailer, but there's one that's not in the trailers that was great.
Who knows?
They
could have been playing Super Fight and they were just like, okay, let's do this.
Yeah, it's really good. They do a good job of using string powers with both the stealth aspects of that. And the sort of how that changes your environment, that kind of thing. There's also some really good stuff in Marvel history here because of Michael Douglas's involvement.
Yeah.
That sort of ties back into the early days of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Nice.
Which was interesting. And there are some reveals about things that make me very happy about where this is going to go in the future and where it sort of implies about the past of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yep. Really, it's a shame that DC has been so off their game. Because, wouldn't it be nice to be able to see a Superman movie and like, see all the references in it, you're like, oh, how cool is that?
Yeah.
You know, yep. like we get all the time with the Marvel movies.
Yep, would be great. I mean, that's what they do in the shows.
The DC characters and stuff, they just... Except, yeah, the shows have been fantastic.
Yeah.
Flash, the TV show, has been giving us what I want from the DC movies.
Lots of little Easter eggs. But even without the Easter eggs, even if you don't know who Ant-Man is, I think this was the key challenge is... You can go in and find this to be a really fun, entertaining movie.
Right.
Yeah, I will say one thing. There's a supporting character, and I'm always going to blank on his name, who's plays Scott's
Michael
best
Pena.
Friend. Michael Pena.
He walks away with every scene he's in.
Oh, my God. He's hilarious.
He's so good. Dave, you would know him from The Shield. He was Shane's second partner. He was the when he and Vic sort of split up and Shane had a new partner, so he was his partner there. He's been in a bunch of stuff,
but he was
amazing here. The rapper T.I. plays a driver.
Actually, I think the whole cast, even the villain of the piece.
Corey Stoll is fantastic as the villain, and it was a really good repurposing of Yellowjacket to make him, because Ant-Man doesn't have a rogues gallery. He's got Egghead. They're not going to do Egghead. I don't see it happening. They had to repurpose him. And I won't reveal because Dave will know, but the real name of Corey Stoll's character is also a nod to a villain that I really love. So I was very happy about that. And Evangeline Lilly was great.
Yeah.
Love interest?
She is Hope Van Dyne. She's Hank Pym's daughter.
Okay.
And I had this conversation with Randy a little bit after, and I feel that sometimes Evangeline Lilly can be come across as a little bit
cold. Yeah.
And this one, it felt like she was on in every scene, sort of like at the best that she was in Lost.
Yeah, she was having fun with it, and
she
could
really
tell.
Was.
You know, one of the best things she ever did in Lost, I think this may have come up when we were talking about Lost at some point, was when she and Sawyer were drunk and they were doing like the Truth or Dare or something like that.
Yeah,
yeah.
And like she got to kind of be more human and I think probably be a little more like herself and less.
Yeah.
Sometimes that character was, you know, a martyr-y kind of character,
the same way
Jack was, and they both ran the risk of being boring. I think sometimes they just got to let those characters be a bit more human, and it sounds like they let her that kind of got to come out in this.
Yeah, and Paul Rudd, of course, was great.
Yes,
I mean, yeah. And we have not given anything away. There's lots of cool little Easter eggs and cool moments that we did not talk about here. Yeah, go see it. This was John Sutton, who went with us, was saying that this is in his top five Marvel movies.
Yeah,
and it is probably just outside mine.
Yeah, I could see it squeezing into like the number five slot. I think
for me, it's like right at number six. I still love the original Iron Man so much that it's going to have to, and I love the original Avengers, but beyond all reason. So,
you've probably seen it the most out of all of us.
But between the two, I actually think I like this better than Age of Ultron. For as far as this summer's Marvel movies, I think this was a more approachable, more fun movie.
I tend to like more focused ones.
Yeah,
since this is going to be, I know, kind of focused and not kind of the somewhat bloated movie that Age of Ultron was.
Yeah.
I could see that being my thought as well.
Yeah.
But we'll find out. I'll try and catch it this week.
Dave, you didn't see Ant-Man, but you did see another movie.
Right. I saw a fancy movie. I saw Mr. Holmes, the Ian McKellen as aging Sherlock Holmes movie.
Ian McKellen as John Holmes, the porn star?
Yes, that's right. It was interesting.
Weird.
Ian McKellen is a brave man. Did you see the thing where he's like, he and Patrick Stewart are like hooking up with like Taylor Swift's posse of people, and they're like, he was singing Uptown Funk. I watched
That's
this
amazing.
This morning on YouTube, and Ian McKellen, he's one of those people like Christopher Lee. He's like the coolest dude ever.
Yep.
So in this movie, I'd seen the trailers, and they looked good to me. It's set in like, I'm going to say the 1930s or 40s. And he is supposed to be quite old. He's supposed older than Ian McKellen actually is.
Okay.
He's supposed to be like 93 and actually dealing with like senility, maybe even why can I not say Alzheimer's or something like that. They don't use the word. I don't even know if it was known at the time.
I don't think
they called it that. They probably called it dementia.
They probably called it the vapors. Everything back when it was the vapors.
So what happens is he's sort of retired to a quiet country house to engage in some beekeeping and sort of relax, but he's also dwelling upon one of his last mysteries. And the conceit in this, by the way, is that Watson was the one who wrote all the books.
Yeah.
That he was the one who wrote them. He embellished a whole lot, but he is still Sherlock Holmes. He can still, as the little kid in it who kind of befriends him, says, he's like, can you do the thing? He's like, what do you mean? He's like, the thing where you look at somebody and you tell them all everything about them, and of course he has to do it later on, to a very dramatic effect in a certain scene. But this is a drama, and it's like, it's a serious piece. It has to do with a lot of sort of melancholy subjects, and it flashes back to that final case quite a bit. as he's trying to, through his clouded memory, remember exactly what happened, because he knows it wasn't exactly like the book, but Watson has died, and he it's like tugging at him.
Yeah.
And then there's sort of a drama going on with the family. There's actually three mysteries in this, all of which are resolved in a really pretty spectacular way by the end. But it's a quieter drama kind of movie, and a really good showcase for all the actors. The kid's mom is... Oh, I can't say the actress's name. She's a really talented actress. She was in, out of all things that I'm thinking of right now, Mothman Prophecies. Who was the sheriff in that, Nick? Do you remember? I don't remember.
Oh, yeah. And Richard Gere was in it, and then...
So it's Richard Gere in a wig. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, talented actress.
Laura Linney?
Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly right. she plays the kid's mom, but... Anyway, it's only showing locally at the Arbor Theater, so it falls into the art house stuff, but it's also a pretty approachable one, and it was doing clearly very well. The whole theater was pretty much packed when we went.
Hmm. Was everyone wearing dual Deerstalker caps and pipes?
They were not.
So nobody cosplayed?
That is
I don't know about dedication.
That is a reference in there. He mentions that he never actually wore the Deerstalker, and one of the people he talks to... is very much lamenting it.
Yeah,
and he considers like wearing it just for them next time.
Yeah. All right. There's also a game that Dave and I have been playing. We've been trying to get Nick to play, but he hasn't been haven't been able to play it yet.
It keeps on saying talk to the hand.
Yep, that's exactly right. And that is the DC deck building game, which there's several different versions.
Right. There's several core games and several expansions.
Yeah. So every game, basically, when they put out a core game. It is a standalone game. You can always incorporate all the cards together, kind of like Munchkin.
Yeah.
But you can also play them separately, and they add in different mechanics. So there's the base game, then there's Heroes Unite, which adds in some different heroes like Starfire, Nightwing, and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Then there's Forever Evil, where you play the villains instead of the heroes. And then there's a new one, Teen Titans, which just came out, which has some sort of like ongoing mechanics, I think.
Yeah, it's like persistent powers and things like that.
But this is a deck-building game, so it's along the lines of something like Dominion or Star Realms. Right. It's very similar to those.
You refine and buff up your deck and stuff as you're going.
So you each choose a hero, which in the main game is the seven members of the Justice League.
Yep.
And each hero has a specific ability that helps them. Like, for example, I believe Martian Manhunter, when you get heroes or villains, you get extra bonuses for having them.
Right.
Or Flash gets to draw an extra card, something like that.
You draw from a lineup of cards, not unlike the Dominion lineup.
Yeah. There'll be five cards up there, and they will represent things that are both heroes, villains, equipment, bases, and powers
that you can
recruit using your power points.
With an ultimate goal of defeating a pile of villain cards.
Yep, and you need a big number of power points to defeat those villains. Once you defeat that villain, it goes into your deck and can help you.
Yep.
So it's sort of abstract that you're always sort of throwing villains and heroes out at the same time to do things. But
I found that thematically it was like, I suppose I'd say kind of weak in the sense that, you know, you might be playing as Batman, but you'll have like cards that have like Flash's super speed in it that allows you to draw another card and stuff.
Right.
But very, very high on the fun factor.
Yeah.
Like I really loved it.
Yeah, and I have since played the Forever Evil version three times, and I really like that one, too.
It uses what Cryptozoic calls their Cerberus system, which is a deck-building system that they've used for a Lord of the Rings thing that sold well at the store, although the Fellowship one is out right now, and also like for Street Fighter and Naruto.
Mm-hmm.
I actually bought the Street Fighter one on a whim at one point.
And haven't played it yet.
And haven't played it. But I'm looking forward to trying it, and it seems like with a little help from the internet's friends, there's some suggestions on combining it with the DC one so we can do some DC versus Street Fighter.
Yeah, which would be cool.
But I think the one of the best qualities the game has, very easy to pick up and play.
Yeah.
You can be playing it in 5 minutes.
I've taught this game to numerous people in the past few weeks, and it's very easy to teach.
Probably maybe 45 minutes for the average game?
For average, although every time we've played with new players, it seems to take about an hour and a half.
Yeah, it's new players.
So once you know how to play it, it plays in like 45 minutes. Yeah.
It always feels brisk to me, I guess.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like a long game. Right now, most of it is out. We have the Teen Titans base game, I think, and the two-player Batman Joker, which I think, Dave, you picked up.
Right. I haven't had a chance to play it yet, but I actually may play it tonight, so I'll report back in on that.
Yeah.
But if you know one version of this system or you've played one of the core games, you definitely know them all.
Yeah. Or for that matter, if you've played Star Realms or Dominion, you'll pick this up so quickly.
Yeah.
It's really fun, and I became...
Sure. ahead.
I became completely addicted to it. After we played it the first time, I called up Nick, and I'm like, yeah, put one of everything aside for me.
Yeah.
Even one of those game mats.
Yeah. I'm sorry we don't have anything. It's entirely my fault.
If you're a DC fan, I mean, obviously, this is a good game for, like, kind of, I would say, somewhat casual gamers. I think more dedicated gamers will like it too. In fact, it rates high on board game.
Well, yeah, one of our friends who loves it is what I'd call one of these diehard, like, the analysts of game mechanic types. Yeah.
But I think its special appeal may be to people who are kind of casual players because of its approachability.
Yeah,
and also if you're a DC fan and you're looking for kind of a light DC game to get in on, this is the one.
Yeah, definitely. All right, I played a few other games this weekend. Finally got to play Takenoko, which I don't know if you guys have played.
Nope. I have not. Seen it played multiple times.
It's a game where basically the Emperor of China gives a gift of a panda to the Emperor of Japan, or vice versa. I think it's the Emperor of Japan gives it. And the Emperor is very pleased with it, but the panda loves to eat bamboo, and the gardener, the Emperor's gardener, is trying to grow bamboo. And so basically you play this game by trying to – there's three different types of cards. You're trying to please the panda by giving it the right kind of bamboo to eat. You're trying to please the gardener by letting him grow bamboo to a certain height and certain colors of tiles. And you're trying to please the Emperor with the arrangement of different tiles.
May I just say, this is an amazing premise.
Yes, it really is. And it's super fun. It's adorable. The designs of it is really, really nice.
Isn't
and
there
cute.
Like a little plastic panda
There's
piece?
A little full-color plastic panda. There's a full-color plastic gardener. there are little – you each get a little card to indicate when you take your turns, and they are really nice art. It is a really fun, sort of whimsical game. There's a lot of complexity to the gameplay because there's a lot of possibilities, but it's very easy to pick up and play.
Nice.
I was very taken with this game and watched the tabletop episode with it and really enjoyed it. So that's a fun game and definitely one to play. Mm-hmm. I also played a game called Concept. This is another one I heard from tabletop. And the biggest thing about this is this board that's like – it's like this big board of colorful icons. Mm-hmm. They represent everything from sort of an idea to – there's like a number, there's size, there's a group of people, or if it's fiction. And you get these cards that have about 10 things on them, anything from – one of the ones I had was like the Arc de Triomphe. Okay. That was a hard one. And then there was one that was a saying, curl up into a ball. Mm-hmm. What you do is you choose one. And then you use little markers on the board to try and get people to figure out what it's sort of a charades type thing.
Hmm.
So for curl up into a ball, there was a spiral and there was a ball and there was an up indicator, like a direction.
Oh, yeah,
I put the first thing up and down was curl and then up and then ball. So and I was sort of trying to get them to guess. And I said, it's expression. Nobody guessed it. It was too hard.
Oh, but all the many things on the board allowed you these combinations of conceptual things. That's really neat.
It's really fun. It's a really fun party game. We've played several rounds of it and I like it a lot. That board is really impressive. So we've got that one. We just got that one at the store. And then also I played a game called Double Feature, which is a movie game where you have two cards representing a place for characters, a place for props, a place for theme, a place for genre. And each turn you'll have two cards. So you might have, say, a war movie or western that has one word title.
Okay.
And everybody in the group once that down, everybody picks one. And the first person to get one in gets the card that's been down the longest.
Uh-huh.
So say, you know, if you pick Shane, the director, the guy who placed that card, mm-hmm. says, okay, yeah, that fits. They give you the western or war movie card, and now you've got the one word title, and you pull another card, whether it's a prop or something else, and then people go around picking it.
Interesting.
And you got to be quick, and you got to have a little bit of film knowledge. But it was interesting because we'd get to one point where there were like six of us playing, and we put it down, or five of us, I guess we were full of the max, and we put one down, and everyone was like, "Well, wait a minute, is this?" And we'd all sort of discuss like whether this movie that someone had named was actually right, or whether anyone could come up with one that fit the parameters and that kind of thing. It was really quick play, fun party game. So definitely recommended.
CineLinks. I remember there was some kind of questions like that, like, you know, is Pulp Fiction a drama? You know,
right.
I guess, yeah, it's at least partially a drama. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I actually kind of enjoy those debates.
Yeah. It's a fun, like I say, I played a lot of party game type stuff. Only exception being Takenoko and the deck building game, or more traditional games. But,
right.
But they're both fun party games if you like stuff like Super Fight and Cards Against Humanity and Geek Out and that kind of stuff. Definitely recommend both Double Feature and Concept.
I think there's a lot of value to games that are sort of lighter and quicker fare. You know,
yeah.
Obviously elaborate, you know, 5-hour games, 3-hour games, sure, and stuff have strong roles too.
Hey, we all love Firefly and Lords of Waterdeep.
Yeah, that's true. But it's tough to find time sometimes.
Yes. And these are great games for in between sessions of game nights. If you have a, you know, as I do,
groups going,
friends who play board games, and then throw a board game night, and a bunch of people come over, and you just sort of wait for a group to open up. This is a good place to play a game. You can sort of drop in and out of until it's time to play another game.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, that about wraps it up for us this week. Until next time,
Yo Joe.
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.